برای دیگر صلوات اللهم صل علی محمد.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد
وعلى أهل بيته الأطيبين الأنجمين بهم نتولى ومن أعدائهم نتبرأ. اللهم كل وليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى أرضائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة، وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا، حتى تسكنهم أرضك طوعا وتمتعهم فيها طويلا.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
By the grace of Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala, an opportunity was granted and quite a few topics were touched on compassion of Allah, compassion towards each other, between the spouses, towards the children, towards the parents. And we talked on the first 2 days regarding the chain of events which led to the Shahadat of Hazrat Zahra alayha salam, and in those few hours after Rasulullah, what exactly happened in the house of Wahi and in the headquarters of Islam. And also we talked a lot about the importance of the recitation of Salawat ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
And the quotes, riwayat from Ma'sumin alayhi salam in this regard. Now one of them says that الصلاة على النبي أمحق للخطايا من الماء للنار. Here, Amir al-Mu'mineen, he says that when you recite a salawat upon the Holy Prophet and his household, says this salawat in destroying the wrong and the sins that we have done is much more stronger than that what water does to fire. A water may put off the fire, but says that this salawat ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad destroys the wrong and the sins much more than what the water does. And we talked about repentance, having hope in Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, in optimism, etc. Now this is a hadith quoted by both the schools of thought, the Shias and the Sunnis. They have reported this. And that is when Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam,
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad,
he performed his wuzu, people they used to heed and hastened to get hold of the drops of water dropping from his wuzu. Now they did that as tabarruk, and in this task of theirs, that is coming and collecting the droplets of the wuzu water of the Prophet, there was no nifaq, there was no hypocrisy, there were no quarrels, there was no showing off, there was no tazahur. It was the love they had towards the Holy Prophet for which they used to do. Now the love, they loved it and sought that droplet of water of the wuzu of Rasulullah as tabarruk. The question is, this nation, who was so much into this rushing and hastening to seek tabarruk from the droplets of Rasulullah's water, why soon after Rasulullah they did not support the part of his existence? Why did they not support his daughter? Now was that droplets of water dropping from the wuzu of Rasulullah much more mubarak than the part of her, of his existence? So that is the question. Why did they not support her after Rasulullah? Now during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen, there were three known parties that stood against Amir al-Mu'mineen. The first one is the Qasitin. Qasitin is that party and the alliance of Bani Umayyah, the power-hungry politicians. The ultimate aim was to getting into power by whatever means, whatever method, whatever manner. They installed the Siffin war against Amir al-Mu'mineen during that time. These are the Abbasideen. Nargisin, and they are those who broke their allegiance with Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, and in them it's Talha, Zubayr, and they were after the charms and beauties and the attachments of this dunya, this world, and Imam, he never fulfilled their desires. As a result of that, because their interests were not being met, they installed the battle of Jamal against Amir al-Mu'mineen. The third group which was against the Imam is Mariqeen, and they are the hyper, the ultra-religious extremists, and only their opinion was shown towards religion, nothing else. Or the term that is used is Khushki Muqaddas, it's only holy and holy without any brain and any mind. So the holy, ignorant and the stupid people were known as the Mariqeen. And in the battle of Siffin, when Qur'ans were taken on the swords and on the spears, when these Qur'ans emerged on these spears and swords, we find that these people, they come to Amir al-Mu'mineen and they say that, do you want to fight Qur'an? When Amir al-Mu'mineen, no matter how much he explained to them, that our war with them is for the sake of Qur'an, and they are cheating you, deceiving you, but they never understood. So these are the extremist, the ultra-religious people are stupid and who were not holy at all. So did they accept Quran? We had nothing to do with them. Now they believed fighting with Quran is kufr and we won't be with you. That is what they said to Amir al-Mu'mineen. So they stood against Imam, and in the battle of Nahrawan they fought him. As a result of that, they killed him. So three main parties, Naqisin, Qasitin, and Mariqeen. Now here let us see a fourth group, and that is, although they were not known to be the enemies of the Imam, as they did not install any battles against him, but this fourth group hurt the Imam the most. That is, if he had people of this caliber, then he wouldn't need an enemy. So this fourth group. Now who are they? Now they were known to be his friends, as if they were the friends of the Imam, and Imam did not need any enemies if they were the friends. So they are those, if they were tagged, who are tagged and named in Nahjul Balagha. And we find full many quotes from Amir al-Mu'mineen where he complains regarding this group of people, the pains that were afflicted to Amir al-Mu'mineen by them. So the best name that we could give to this fourth group is Qa'idin, those who sat. Those who sat and those who were quiet. Now people who are careless, without a conscience, without any basira, are those who are weak in their iman. They have no insight, and in fitnas and in tests, we find that they cannot judge what is right and what is wrong. And the reason for that is that stupidity. The reason for that is that za'ful iman, the weak iman they have, and not abiding by the instructions of a waliyullah. So they have lost the criteria of right and wrong, or if they were to recognize, distinguish between haq and batil, they cannot do that. So they are not prepared to support, they are not prepared to sacrifice, they are not prepared to invest anything for the well-being, for haq. Now this fourth group, they are those, whenever there is a dispute, they stand in the corner, and they were not few in number as well. And we do have this in every time, in every era. Now many known figures of that time, like Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas, like Bassam bin Sabit, like Usama bin Zayd, and the sons of some of the most prominent figures of that time, they were in this group, that is, always stand in the corner, silent, quiet. Now they were backbenchers who neither joined the enemies nor were with the Imam at all. But ultimately, their performance was such that was always in the favor of the enemies of the Imam. And a group, unaware, lost, confused, general public, who could not recognize right and wrong and were careless to know. Now this fourth group, which was known as Qa'ilin and the silent, and those who in places and times cried for Ahlul Bayt. Now crying for Ahlul Bayt is good, but not every tear, but every crying, it's the same. So we've got different types of cries. So crying for Aba Abdullah without ma'rifah, it's worthless. Crying for Aba Abdullah with ma'rifah is worth. Now, so tears also, not all tears are same. So there is a cry a person possesses which is based on the rank and the ma'rifah of this individual who has achieved a high rank, and he acquires, which, and that rank is acquired by knowing and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, and the oppressions towards their rank and their position. And at times one may cry just due to burst of feelings. Now this fourth group, they cried, but they never gave any sacrifice. No investment, just crying. Now to understand what exactly this means is, a person, he has bought some fresh bread and he's going to his home, and on the way he sees a beggar, a crying, he was crying. He said, "Why are you crying?" He says, "It's a few days, 2 days, I haven't eaten anything and no one has helped me." This person who has bread, what he does is that he sits in front of him and he starts crying himself. Now the beggar who was in need, who was hungry, he says, "Why are you crying?" He says, "I'm crying at your fate, at how miserable your circumstances are. That's why I'm crying." That beggar, he says that, "Okay, I've got a solution. You give me a little bit of that bread, neither you cry nor I cry." He says, "No, I'll cry for you as much as you want. I'll sit here for days and cry with you, but this bread I won't give you. Investment, no. Sacrifice, no." So there are people who are of this caliber that when it comes to crying, they'll cry, but sacrifice they won't give. Now in this regard, we find this fourth group who are ready to cry but not ready to give any investment, any sacrifice. And in Karbala we do find Farazdaq, this poet, he says that people of Kufa, he says, قُلُوبُهُمْ مَعَكْ وَسُّيُوفُهُمْ عَلَيْكْ. He says that people of Kufa, Imam, their hearts are with you, but their swords are not with you. The swords are against you. So people of Kufa, they want to cry, but without any investment, without any sacrifice. So not in that position to give their lives, wealth, honor, fame, rights and positions. So they are prepared to jump and get hold of the droplets of the wuzu water of Rasulullah. But when it comes to supporting the daughter of Rasulullah, when she is being bashed between the door and the wall, no one steps forward. Everyone is silent and quiet. Why? The reason for that is, collecting those droplets of wuzu water of Rasulullah, it's free. We get the barakah from that, we'll get whatever ranks and bestowals from Allah, because all of that is free. But supporting the part of Rasulullah's existence, bal atum minni faman adaha faqad adani, that is the daughter of Rasulullah, supporting her, that costs. It needs investment. It means we have to give support, sacrifice. So always this fourth group of people, which is known as the Qa'ideen, they are the most dangerous. Dangerous people for themselves, for their end, and dangerous in the society as well. So always politicians who are smart, like Muawiyah, they get help from this fourth group of people, from the Qa'ideen. And it is by their presence they get rights to fulfill their own carnal desires from this fourth group of people. So the smart politicians, their army, or their strength is the presence of such weak iman people. People who are zaiful iman, people whose faith is weak, who's shaky. So having hope in such weak iman people, Muawiyah offered his Jummah prayers on Wednesday and no one objected. There were people, large in number. No one objects there. There is no one to stand. Either they are scared or they are confused that what will they say. So these are the people of that fourth group who are known as Qa'idin, and who are the people who are Za'if al-Iman, and they are the most dangerous, the most harmful to the community. And by their presence, it was Imam who was hurt. By their silence, Imam was hurt. So people of this weak faith and insight, who are not ready to fight and stand for their faith, weak faith is also in levels. Not every weak faith is same. As Iman, it's in levels. Not every Iman is the same. So there may be people with weak Iman, but they may not be at fault also. For example, in Usul al-Kafi, we find that some, they share the level of Iman they got, it's different. Some of them are on level 1, in the elementary levels. Some a bit higher in their Iman. And we find personalities like Salman among the those who are not ma'asoom, he reaches a rank which is the level 10 of Iman. So everyone in Iman is not equal, and even when it comes to people with a weak Iman, they are not equal. So people among the weak Iman also are not the same. Now Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, he says that someone who has a weak faith, who is of that weak Iman, don't force him too much towards deen. And then says that let him stick to that wajib, don't force him, because he is in that level. And then he continues with this hadith and says that a Christian, he embraces and becomes a Muslim. And then in the community there was another Muslim present. He says, now that you've become a Muslim, there are some tasks you have to fulfill. Says some duties wajib on you. Early in the morning he comes to this house of this person who has just converted. Says, yes, what is it? Says, we have to go to the mosque. He brings him to the mosque to say his Fajr prayers. He was done, sleepy, first time in his life. He has to come to the mosque early in the morning to say his prayers. The prayers were done. He says, let's go home. He says, why home? Stay here. Bainat tulu'ain, it's makruh. Between the two sunrises. Stay here. We'll do some recitals and zikr. He says, now let's go home. He says, what is this dunya, world? It's not worth the attachment. Stay here. We'll do some recitals, zikr. It's zohr, it's asr, it's maghrib. Isha, the next day in the morning when he comes to knock at his door and say, come on, let's go to the mosque. He says, your deen is good, but it's only for those who have nothing to do. So people who are za'if and weak in their Iman, Imam says, don't force them. So some weak Iman people, they by default and in their make and model, they are not at fault. Some are unaware, due to whatever the job they have. But from everything, what they have learned from deen, they stick to it, they abide by it. The little they have learned, they, like for example, prayers and fast, the two things they have learned, they know it. I'll give you an example here of some of these people who had those basics, but they were strong in those basics. For example here, we've got Marhum Tayyib in Tehran prior to the Islamic Revolution. Someone who did not have a good past, a bad past, an evil past. But he was not in war with the association of Ahlul Bayt. Someone whose Iman is weak, but whatever he knew, he was strong in it. If he knew prayers, he was strong in it. If it was fast, he was strong in it. Now here, this person, he was strong in his aqidah, in his iman towards the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, and in particular towards Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. Especially in Muharram, he was present in all of these camps of Abu Abdullah, wherever his majlis is held. Secondly, his might in helping, extending his helping hands towards the mu'mineen, that is, if he saw someone who is weak and is in need of help and support, he helps them. Now here we find that Ayatullah Maraj Najafi, among the Maraj Taqlid who dies in the 1995. He led the prayers at the Haram of Ma'suma Qum, at Qum for 50 years. The first one to enter into the Haram for 50 years. Not easy, 50 years. He led the prayers 5 times, thousands of students, thousands of mu'mineen joined in his prayers. He says that in those days, now one of his quotes is that he says, Allah raised me with one of these gangsters of Tehran who've got that strong faith and strong iman. And it is as such that there will be a lot of wrong in some of these people, but their aqidah, their faith towards Ahlul Bayt is strong. He says that one night, and in those days Haram, it used to close at midnight. As I was going to my house, a drunk gangster, he gets hold of me. He says, I'm alone, no help, no one could save me. And he says, Amu, uncle, where are you off to? He's at my home. Says, I want you to recite for me a majlis for Abu Abdullah. He was worried that he's drunk, he's all alone and no one there. He has to talk to him. He says, okay, I can recite, but to recite a majlis, you need a proper place. You can't just recite a majlis in the streets. He says, okay, let's go to a place. He brings him to a room. And then he says, I can recite, but to recite, there should be an audience. There is no one here. He says, I'll be your audience. I'll listen to you, you recite. He just wants to get away. He says, I'll recite, but to recite, you need a member. There is no member here. There is no pulpit. Now this person, he says, I'll sit. I'll be your member. You sit on my back and you recite. He says, there's no way out. He just won't leave me, won't let me go. Says, okay. He bows down, makes himself like a bench and says, you sit on my back and you recite. He says, I sat and I started reciting. And when I come to Masahib, this person who was so evil and bad, he says, he bursts into tears. And I could feel the tremor of his back as to how he is crying. He says that Marhum Tayyib, someone who has that bitter past, and with this beautiful quality that whenever it was someone was in need, he helps. A person, he comes to him and says that, I want to get married, I haven't got anything, no funds. Because everyone knew him in the market, he comes and collects 2,000 tumans, a little bit from every shop, some donations, brings this money, 2,000 tumans, 50 years ago, it's a lot of money. And says, for your wedding and whatever you save from it, that can be your investment for your life. He says, okay, thank you, and comes. And on one occasion, when he was going home, he sees in the streets, on the pavement, there is a Sayyid sitting with all of his household stuff. Comes and says, Sayyid, what's up? What's wrong? He says, I couldn't pay my rent. My landlord has evicted me and has thrown me out with all my belongings. Calls his people, get me a truck. Loads all of his stuff in that truck. Says, Sayyid, I want you to sit in the front. He drives the car, Sayyid sitting next to him, every other person stacked with the furniture and all his household stuff, and comes to a registration office. Says, have you got your ID with you? He doesn't know what is happening here. This Sayyid was evicted from his house. Says, yes. Gives his ID, goes to that registration office and transfers deed of a property of a house to him. Brings him to that house. Says, do you see this house? This brand new house? It's yours. It's transferred to you. I made it for myself. I haven't entered. It's brand new. It's all yours. And when he gives the keys to this Sayyid, he says that, Sayyid, this is yours. One request. And that is, you ask your mother, Zahra, to make me a house there in the hereafter. Now the slogan of this person who has this bitter past, he says, Khuda paakam kuno khaakam kun. That is, Khuda, purify me and then bury me. So we talked and said that whatever you wish, whatever you desire is what you get. Now his wish was that, Khuda paakam kun wa khaakam kun. purify me and then bury me. And it happens as such. And we do find amazing sayings over here. That is, Danya Harif Nis Kipakam Kunat Magam Mawla Bihake Kuya Khud as Lotf Shu Yadam. That is, oceans they cannot wash me, but the dirt of the and the dust of the lane of Hussein can purify me. The wrong in me, it cannot be cleared, it cannot be removed. But the dirt and the dust of the grave of the lane of Hussein can do that job. So he, with that bitter past, but with this association with the household of Ahlul Bayt, it does. Now what happens is that he gives the charge of that house and says, Khuda Hafiz, request is that ask your mother Zahra to make me a house in the hereafter. On the 15th of Khurda, 1342, that is prior to the revolution, 50 years ago, there was this call of the son of Zahra, alayhi salam, marhum. He says that everyone should come out. We find that in this command of a waliyullah, many of those who were holy, who were muqaddas, they failed. But this person with this bitter past, marhum Tayyib, what he does is that from the south of Tehran, he takes a procession and starts his move in accordance to the instructions of this waliyullah. So now, with this move of his, that is attachment to a waliyullah, everything changes in his life. That person with that negative past is not that person with that negative past anymore. For that reason, he is imprisoned, he is tortured, and the Savak, they come and they say to him that what have you to do with all this politics? A Marja at-Taqlid has given instructions, but it's not for you. You are made for something else, not for these tasks. We will forgive you and we will give you a better livelihood than whatever you had. Just one thing you do with. Says, what is that? Says that we will have a live media interview. You just come on the radio and say, on the TV and say that whatever you did, this procession from the south of Tehran you took, you got money. You were paid for that and for that reason you did that. Now thank you. In his own terminology, he says that don't make me stand against the son of Zahra. So that is that Iman, strong Iman. So whatever he had faith in, he stuck to it. He stood by it. He says, I took no money, I came out for his grandfather, for the grandfather of Imam. Now he says that you will be executed. He says, I took no money, do whatever you want. I will not stand against Fatima's son. His execution warrant was issued. His brother Tahir, he says that I went to see my brother Tayyib in the prisons. Says, this brother of mine, he was shrunk, so small, so much torture, he had become so skinny. And he says, he said to me, that is Tayyib to his brother Tahir, says that I am done and I will be hanged soon. One request. And that is, you will go to Agharullah. Agharullah is Imam Khomeini. Says, you will go to him, convey my salam to him, and two messages from me to him. Says, first message you will give him is that I did not cheat you. There was no khiyanat in me. And then says that the second message is that I don't have a good past. And after my death, I want you to be my Shafi'ah. Look at the Imam. That is someone with such a bitter past, but strong in the little faith he has.
Takbir.
Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu
Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu
Akbar. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali
says that Tahir, he comes to deliver his brother's message to marhum Imam and says, Imam, upon getting this message from him, was hurt a lot, very much affected. He delivered the two messages. He says that I did not, he said, my brother said that I did not cheat you. In reply, Imam says that yes, he was a man, great. And a man who is great, he will never do any khiyanat. He will never cheat. And then he says that after my death, after his death, he wants you to be his shafi. Shafi means mediate. Someone who can help him out in the hereafter. Tahir, the brother, says, at this marhum Imam Khomeini, he lowers down his head. After a while, he raises his head and says, Tayyib Qarish Durust Ast. He's safe, he's done, he's successful. So he is among those first shuhada of the Inqilab, or among the first horror of the Inqilab of the Islam. So someone with a bitter past, but with the little he knew, he stuck to it. So whatever he said, Khuda, pa kam kun o kha kam kun, it happened. He was purified and he was buried. Buried in Shah Abdul Azim, south of Tehran. Abdul Azim is the grandson of our second Imam. And then they say that people, they come and see, and many of them do get their wishes granted by this noble person. So someone whose past was such, whose end is so beautiful, and today so much exalted and great. So in this creation of Allah, in this field of spirituality, in this field of obedience, things, they just change overnight. You find someone who was a beggar becomes a ruler, someone who's a ruler becomes a beggar, someone who was a mountain becomes a piece of straw, nothing. So all this exists, it happens. So we don't have to lose hope, no matter how much wrong we may have had done. If that little iman is given to us, we stand by that iman, we strengthen it, and never distance ourselves from this association of Ahlul Bayt. Never distance ourselves from Awliyaullah. So they were weak people, and that much they knew and learned, they stood by it and they were firm in it. Now those at the time of Amirul Mu'mineen and Hazrat Zahra alayhi wassalam were those who were da'iful iman, weak in their iman, and they were faulty in their weakness as well. So there were smart people, smart in their worldly affairs. Only then, when it came to God, when it comes to support of Ahlul Bayt, when it comes to standing by them, they were not smart. Smart only in their gains, smart only in their worldly desires. So when it comes to being with deen, being with religion, they have a shortfall. So when it comes to God and His religion, they lose their smartness and they become weak. And in Quran, we find various ayat that says that those to whom Jahannam will be assigned, they will have debates in Jahannam, that is between the mustakbirin and the mustazafin, the weak and the arrogant, they will have debates in Jahannam. The leaders of batil, some of these, they will have debates with those who were weak, and the weak, those who gave rights to these batil. Those who gave rights to Muawiyah, for example. Muawiyah was not Muawiyah all by himself. There were these weak, silent, quiet people who did not support Awliyaullah. They were the ones who gave right to Muawiyah. They gave strength to Muawiyah. Quran says, رَبَّنَا هَا أُولَٰئِ أَضَلُّونَا فَآتِهِمْ عَذَابًا ضِعْفًا مِنَ النَّارِ. Now these weak people, in Qiyamah, in the hell, they will say to Allah, that Allah, these are the leaders who misled us. It were those who misled us. For that, you punish them twice. Double the amount of punishment which you will give us, give them double the amount of punishment. Allah in reply says that, لِكُلِّن ذِعْفٌ. Both of you will be punished twice. Double the amount of punishment for both of you. He misled you, but you also gave him a right. Because of your presence, he misled you. He gave up that strength. To both weak and the strong and the leader, he says that the double share of punishment will be given to you. Now, if you were not silent, would they have dragged Amir al-Mu'mineen in the streets of Medina? If they were not silent, would they have bashed Hazrat Zahra between the door and the wall? Would they have come to burn down the house? So they stood silent like spectators watching what the scenes are unfolding. Had they defended, would such a disaster unfold? At times we are amazed of the people of that time. Ism-e-Azam, who is Amir al-Mu'mineen, if namaz exists today, it is because of Amir al-Mu'mineen. If fast is fast today, it is because of Amir al-Mu'mineen. If Kaaba is Kaaba today, it's because of Amir al-Mu'mineen. How come people of that time who were present, who heard, who saw what Rasulullah had said, despite all that, they are silent. They stood against him. So a rope in the neck, he be dragged to the mosque and they watched like spectators, and just a few spoke then. Among them we have Salman who speaks, Miqdad who speaks, and Abu Zar. Now Abu Zar, in the mosque of in Masjid al-Nabi, he stood and spoke the strong brave tongue of Allah. He says that, Ana. He says that, لَوْ قَدَّمْتُمْ مَنْ قَدَّمَ اللَّهُ. That is, oh you confused people, had you put forward he who Allah had put forward to lead, and who his apostle had put forward to lead, and placed him in the right position, and you had placed that person who was placed behind by Allah and by Rasulullah, the way this Waliullah was dragged and this Waliullah has to sit, this would not have happened. The reason for that is because of their silence, because they just watched like spectators. You are at fault. Or the same thing can be seen in that khutbah Fadakiyya from Hazrat Zahra, says that one of those who she complains are those who were silent, who were careless people of that time, not ready to sacrifice. So even if they knew where haq belongs, were not prepared to invest their faith for that. No sacrifice, no investment, nothing. Just sit and cry like that person who has bread. He said, I'm ready to cry. As much as you want, I will. But this bread, I will not give. So what is this weakness that I see in you, she says. That is, you are prepared to defend me. You are not prepared to defend me. Did my father not say that a man is respected, protected, defended, if he is regarded by his children? How come I am not regarded by you? Am I not my father's child? And in that khutbah she delivers, how soon you changed your color and you sat down. Whence you can rise and stand, that what is expected from you. But pity, you won't. They were silent at that time. And the next phase, that is the time of Imam Mujtaba alayhi salam, we find that there is a further decline. So a community, a society during the time of Rasulullah, and when it was time to support a waliullah, we find they are silent, they are quiet, they don't support. The next phase, it's a further decline. When the time of Imam Mujtaba comes, we find that the same nation, they cheat him. A decline from what the initial stage was. And when it is time for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, the same people further decline down, cheaters become criminals. So shaitan, when he comes and attacks, he doesn't come and attack and overnight change people. Shibr was not Shibr from day one. Shibr became Shibr gradually. It's a slow process. Quran says that shaitan, he slowly drives people and brings them into his traps. Says that, وَلَا تَتَّبِعُوا خُطُوَاتِ الشَّيْطَانِ إِنَّهُ لَكُمْ عَدُوٌ مُبِينٌ. That is, you don't follow the khutuwat. Khutuwat, it's the plural of khutwa. Khutwa means steps. Here says that shaitan, he has baby steps, small steps. Shaitan has a lot of patience, a lot of patience. Much more than what we have. He does things easily. And shayateen, who are a reflection of shaitan, they also have a lot of patience. They will plan for 500 years from now. We don't plan for one day. So shaitan says he has khutuwat. Here Quran says that you don't follow the baby steps, the small steps of shaitan. إِنَّهُ لَكُمْ عَدُوٌ مُبِينٌ. This shaitan is your enemy. And an evident enemy. So shaitan, he slowly, steadily works in a way that a nation who was with Rasulullah, after Rasulullah, they become silent. Second phase is that they become cheaters, they cheat Imam al-Mujtaba. Third phase is that they become criminals. Now, in the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, people, they come and they say that, Ya Rasulullah, as long as we are in your presence, we are in your majlis, we feel that we are so much elevated, we feel that we are very good, we see the hell and the heaven, we see everything beyond. But we go back to our own livelihoods, we are different. We feel that we may be hypocrites, we may be munafiqeen. Rasulullah says, no, that is not a sign of hypocrisy. It is not nifaq, but it is these khutuwat al-shaytan. That is, shaytan is gradually, slowly coming into your living. Now, how does this work? Shaytan, on the first day, he doesn't come up with a bottle of liquor and say, come on, drink. He will never do that. Gradually, with some additions, with some mixing, and then he will say that, okay, we don't know, it's mushtaba. You can eat, you can drink, because we don't know. The second phase will be makruh. Makruh is not haram, you won't be punished for that. So makruh, you can do it. The third stage, now that shubha is gone, makruh is also easily done by us, then he would say, haram, it's just a small haram, one munch of a najis sandwich. You didn't have the whole burger, it's just one munch. You just shook her hand, you did not kiss her. So that is just a small haram. It's nothing. So another small haram was done, and then when shaitan is certain that he is good in doing these small harams, he says, okay, now, bismillah, do this kabira as well. This greater sin also can be done. So shaitan comes slowly, gradually, and with all his patience. Now we find Abdul Malik bin Marwan, now even Karbala, what we see, Karbala did not unfold all at once. It took 30 years. Amir al-Mu'mineen, then Imam al-Mujtaba, and then Karbala comes into existence. So those people, they have to be silent, lose their identity. Phase 2, become cheaters. Phase 3, become criminals and kill someone. Abdul Malik bin Marwan, he was known to be the Hamamatul Masjid, meaning that the pigeon of a mosque. Always in the mosque, always praying, always a Quran in his hand. And the day when his father died, they came to him and say that today, from now, your father has passed away and you are the Khalifa, the ruler. What he does, closes the Quran and says, Hada firaqun bayni wa baynak. This is the separation between me and you, done, no Quran. Becomes the Khalifa, the ruler, and the horrendous crimes which he committed in those 20 years, no one could imagine. Now this same person, Abdul Malik bin Marwan, he says that when he was not the Khalifa, if he had killed an ant, he couldn't sleep all day. He couldn't rest. He was so much restless that he has hurt an ant. But then he comes to a point that he says that for me, killing someone is as easy as whatever you can think of. His wife, she comes and says to him that, how come you pray and also you drink? He says, I'll drink blood also. For me, it makes no difference. So someone who was in that phase, how much decline he has, and how did that happen? That decline is also gradual and slow. Now a tip, a checker, to look into ourselves as to what we are, and if there is anything wrong in our system, and if there is, God forbid, that needs to be checked and corrected now. The first sign that we have, that is how shaitan attacks, khutuwat al-shaytan, is that towards ma'nawiyyat, towards spirituality, prayers, fasts, reciting Quran, du'as, etc., do we have that feeling, that sensation, that it is time for prayer, we have to go towards prayer? That is that first time. If that sensation, feeling towards ma'naviyyat and spirituality is lacking or doesn't exist, it means that shaitan has entered our livelihood and that phase one of us, of that is passed by. So, towards ma'naviyyat, then time passes and feels not like opening a book of du'a. That is bad. If it is as such that weeks and weeks pass, months and months pass, years pass, and I don't feel like opening any Quran, reciting any dua, any ziyarat, it is a bad sign. We have been created to worship. مَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنْسِ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. Regardless of what our job is, what field we are in, this association and bonding with God has to be there all the time. If we don't have that bond with du'as, with ziyarat, with Allah, with ma'naviyat, with Ahlul Bayt, crying, weeping, shedding tears for them, etc., it means that that is that first phase that he has entered. So no presence of heart and mind in prayers, that too is a bad sign. On and off, once in a while, if we say our prayers and that presence of heart and mind wasn't present, it's okay. But always not being present, always being absent, always no tawajjuh, that is bad. It means that there is something wrong in our system and that needs to be corrected. Once in a while, we must have a special connection with Allah, separate from the prayers that we have. Bow down in sajda a few minutes, talk to Him. Just talk to Him. La ilaha illa anta subhanaka inni kuntu minaz zalimeen. Just say that. And the great ulama, they say that when you bow down in sajda and say that at least 400 times. And you will see what the benefit of that is. And may Allah give us the tawfiq and opportunity to do that. But not 400 times, at least 4 times. But a special sajda, in addition to all these wajib sajdas that we have throughout the day, a few minutes of our time, and that way we can activate and enhance this lost joy, and that is, or the end, if shaitan has, God forbid, entered our system, he can be ousted. So, the first attack of shaitan is that the joy we get from worship, it's taken away from us. We don't feel like worshipping, we don't enjoy worshipping. And we do find this in the Ahadith of Qudsiyya, that is, Allah says that أَنْ أُحَرِّمَهُ لَذِيذَ مُنَاجَاتِ, that I will abandon him, that is the joy of whispering with me, the joy of communicating with me, that will be seized away from that person. Now the second thing is that, if he does not cure this first stage, that lack of joy, if it is not given back, second step, shaitan comes and creates doubts in our minds, shukuk. What he will say, that all this thing which is being said, it's all these mullahs they have come up with. It doesn't exist in Quran. They've come up, they've made up all these things. Islam is not all that. So all these doubts he will create. And if these doubts are not removed, the third stage is that he will come and say, this pessimism, he will activate and enhance in us. We talked about being optimistic towards Allah, hopeful in Allah. Now, when doubts are there, doubts are not removed, that pessimism will be activated in us. And the fourth stage is al-ayazubillah irtidad. That is, a person comes and rejects, denies whatever has come forth to him. Here, marhum Imam Khomeini and Ayatollah Rizwan Bilbaiwani, the two, they say that in our study circle, there was a student studying with us. He fell ill. He fell ill and they go to see him. They say that we were shocked and amazed to see the last moments of this person. Says that how a person could be so faithless. Says in his last moments, he says that now, when we talk about these doubts, that come to our minds, if they are not removed, the next phase is rejection. So we have to clear those doubts. Clear them. Says that when he was there by the deathbed of this person, he says that God, you know that what God has done to me, no one did. The tyranny, the oppression, the zulm which Allah is doing to me, no one in this creation did. Says, what is that? Says, my children, they are so young, so small, they need me. And now that they need me, he's killing me, he's taking me away. So that is losing faith. Now, doubts, when they are in our minds, they need to be removed. If that irtidad, maybe we may not, God forbid, utter it with our tongues, but that will be poured out, especially at the time of one's death. At that time, no one can cheat, no one can lie. So whatever that faith of an individual is, will be seen. So shaitan, first of all, first phase, that joy is taken away from worship. Second phase, creates doubts. Third phase, he makes one pessimistic. And then the fourth state, it's kufr, rejection and denial. So what happened in the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen then is that, why was she not supported? People of that time, they were quiet, they were silent. Why were they silent? It's that Iman of theirs was weak, Zaiful Iman. And someone who is Zaiful Iman, he's on that danger zone, on that midway. Because a person has to be either on the right path, which is the path of Awliyaullah, or he has to be with the Awliya of Shaitan. There is no midway, and midway is normally dangerous. And we find many examples. Tirmidhi, one of those who comes to Karbala and he sees that everything has unfolded. Here Imam says that, do you want to join us? He says, I've got this load, I have to go and deliver it to my family and I'll join you. When he comes back, he sees everything is done. Karbala has taken shape, Imam has been killed. So someone who has come by the doorstep of the heaven, but he couldn't benefit. And that is Zaiful Iman, people who are weak in Iman. So, shaitan attacks in phases. During the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen, when they were attacked, he makes them silent and quiet. Phase 2, he makes them cheaters. Phase 3, he made them criminals and resulted in Karbala. Today, it's the night of the Arba'een, the 40th day of the Shahadat of Aba Abdullah. And we have the Ziyarat of Arba'een, which is reported from our sixth Imam. And so much of reward, so much of thawab for those Zaireen of the grave of Aba Abdullah has been mentioned for this day. And Allah protect all the Zawar of Aba Abdullah and Hussein and ruin all those who are standing against them and against the mission of Aba Abdullah. Says that for 40 days, the sky, the earth, the entire creation of Allah, everyone present wept for 40 days. The first Zair of the grave of Aba Abdullah is Jabir ibn Abdullah al-Ansari, the sincere companion of Rasulullah. Now, an old person, and at that time he has lost his sight, eyesight. He's blinded. Comes to Karbala, comes to Furat, washes himself, wears the best and the cleanest of his clothes, as if he is becoming a muhrim, wearing an ihram. Applies the best of the fragrances he has, takes his footwear off, says, take me to the grave of Aba Abdullah. Comes by the grave. Now the greatness of Aba Abdullah in his view, the sacrifice which he gave, no one gave in the creation of Allah. In this grand existence, no one gave that sacrifice. Says the greatness of Aba Abdullah was so much in his vision that he says Allahu Akbar 3 times and Allah is greater, Allah is greater, Allah is greater. And then says, bring me by the grave of Aba Abdullah and allow me to place my hand on it. When his hand was placed on the grave of Aba Abdullah, he passed out. He went unconscious. He cried unconscious. And then they pour water on Jabir. When he gains his consciousness, then says, Ya Hussein, 3 times. Says, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein. And then he says that Habibun la yujib Habibun. Says, my beloved, I'm calling you, but you don't reply. And then he says, how can you reply, Hussein? You have no head. And someone who is headless, someone who is drowned in his blood, how can he reply? And on this day we find that Ahlul Bayt, they also, en route from Sham to Medina, they come to a crossroad, and on one side takes them to Iraq, the other takes them to Medina. And upon the request of the inhabitants of this caravan, they come to Karbala. And there they see that Jabir is already present as the first Zahir of Allah, Abdullah Hussein. Now what does Jabir, after crying and saying that this Habib of mine will not respond to me because he has no head, says, Ashhadu annaka ibn khayr al-nabiyyin, I bear witness that you are the son of the best of the prophets, the best descendant of taqwa, the best descendant of guidance, the fifth member of Ashab al-Kisa. Talk so loud about Abu Abdullah, and then looks at the other shuhada who are buried, addresses them, Assalamu alaykum ayyatuhal arwah allati halat bi fana' al-Husayn. That is, salam be upon you souls who clustered around Hussein, who gave their lives and sacrificed themselves for Hussein. And I bear witness that all of you, aqamtum as-salat, you kept up prayer, you gave zakat, and you invited people to the right. And then continues. And then he says that, Hussein, in this sacrifice which you gave, and in the reward which you will get from Allah, I am a shariq, I am a partner of yours, and I will get from you as well. Atiqiyah, he was present. He says, Jabir, what service did you do? How did you help? You are an old man, you can't see. And what sacrifice did you give? And what expectations do you have from Hussein? We talked on this issue, whatever you desire is what you get. And then he says that, I heard, سَمِعْتُ حَبِيبِي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ, I heard my beloved Rasul says, say, مَنْ أَحَبَّ قَوْمًا حُشِرَ مَعَهُمْ, that whosoever loves a nation, he will be raised with that nation. وَمَنْ أَحَبَّ عَمَلَ قَوْمًا, and whosoever loves the action of a nation, أُشْرِكَ فِي عَمَلِهِمْ, he will be a partner in that action. Here we find that the female members of Bani Hashim, the ladies, one after the other, they come to the grave of Abu Abdullah, and one of them, she comes, and then she hugs the grave of Abu Abdullah and says, Ana ya Karbala, nuwaddi'uka jisman, Karbala. We are leaving behind a trust, an amana here, a body. Bila kafanin, wala uslin dafina, says, a body which has no shroud, a body which was not washed and is buried here. Ala ya Karbala, nuwaddi'uka ruhan, we leave behind a soul here, a soul of Ahmad, a soul of his successor, a soul of he who is that Amin, is being left behind. The women here, we find that after this day of Arba'een, when there was all this pleading and crying of the members of this caravan, Imam Sajjad, he saw that if they are going to stay here, they're going to hurt themselves. He instructs them on the third day that we will be leaving for Medina, you'll have to pack up and embark. So they pack up to leave. Here Rubab, the wife of Abu Abdullah, mother of Ali Asghar and Sakina, who has lost both of her children, she requests from Imam Sajjad that, Imam, allow me to stay back here. I can't come, it's difficult for me. Abu Abdullah here, my daughter there, and the other son here. Upon her pleading and requests, Imam allows her to stay there and instructs the Bani Asad, pays them, and tells them to take good care of her. She comes and cries by the grave of Abu Abdullah day and night, and in those severe conditions they make a shade for her over the grave of Abu Abdullah. She stayed there for a year, and after that she came to Medina and did not live for long. Now, 3 days in Karbala and then they come to Medina. When they arrive at Medina, here Imam settles outside Medina. They don't enter Medina. And to Bashir bin Jaslam says that, Bashir, your father was a poet. Have you benefited anything from your father? He says, yes, Alhamdulillah, me too. I can recite. Says, I want you to go to Medina and inform the inhabitants of Medina that what has unfolded on us and that Abu Abdullah has been killed. Now till then, people of Medina, they did not know. Bashir, he quickly carries out the instructions of the Imam, gallops on his horse, comes to Medina. In Masjid al-Nabi, he starts saying that, Ya Ahl al-Islam, La Muqama Lakum Biha, says, O people, O inhabitants of Medina, this is no place to dwell. Says, Qutil al-Husayn, Wajma'i Midrar, Husayn has been killed, and you need to shed tears. Al-Jismu Minhu Bikarbala Mudharraj, that his body is in Karbala, and his Wal-Ra'su Minhu Al-Qinati Yudaru, and his head is being taken from town to town. People, when they hear this message, they say, where is the Ahlul Bayt? They say, Imam is waiting outside Medina. He says that never I saw people so much united, that all of them united and they rushed to see what has happened and to see their Imam. So Medina, no one remained there, all the women, all the children, everyone comes here and see, they come to Imam. Imam, he was weeping, crying with a handkerchief and a piece of cloth in his hand and constantly wiping his tears. Says that, Inna Allaha wa lahul hamd. This is that khutbah which he delivers. They say that indeed Allah, he tested us in a glorious way. And all these, in these tests, Qutila Abu Abdullah al-Husayn, Abu Abdullah was killed. Furthermore, his household, his itrat was taken captive. They were taken from town to town, from place to place, and the head of Abu Abdullah on the javelin on the was taken and is still in towns. Salama, Umm al-Mu'mineen, wife of Rasulullah, she comes to the site. With her is a bottle and some dust of Karbala. And with her is Fatima, the daughter of Hussein. She comes here and then she shows them this bottle which was given to her by Rasulullah, in which there was this sand of Karbala which has turned into blood, and says that the day, and I was informed that the day when this dust turns into blood, that is the day when Abu Abdullah has been killed. Umm al-Baneen, she comes. Now Zainab al-Kubra, when she comes and delivers the message to Umm al-Baneen. Umm al-Baneen, your son Abu al-Fazl has been killed. She says, tell me about Hussein. Says, your other three sons, they have been killed. She says, my Hussein, tell me about my Hussein. Umm Salama gives that message. Umm al-Baneen cries for Hussein. And then we see that our fourth Imam, he cries for Abu Abdullah for 40 years. His khadim says that on a flat stone where he performed his worship, his ibadah, Imam was in sajda, fasting that day. It was time for iftar. I bring some iftar for him to break his fast. He says that, I saw that Imam was in sajda saying that, La ilaha illallah muhammad haqqa, La ilaha illallah ta'abbudan wa raqqa, La ilaha illallah imanan wa tasdeeqa. And he says that, I stood and I counted, and he recited that for 1,000 times. And once he had done, I said to him, Imam, is it not time that you stop crying? Says that you've cried for 40 years. Imam says, what do you say? Prophet Ya'qub, Allah gave him 12 sons. And from those 12 sons, just one of them went missing, who was found later on. Says, for that one son, he cried so much, that his hair was white. He cried so much that he lost his sight. He cried so much that he was hunched. And then his son was given back to him. It says, in front of my eyes, I saw my father die. In front of my eyes, I saw my brothers perish. I saw Bani Hashim, they perish. All in front of my eyes. In addition to that, heads beaten, removed, and bodies beat destroyed. All of that took place in front of my eyes. And how can I not cry? Ala wa la'natullah ala al-qawm al-thalimeen. وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّمُ الْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ إلهي بحق الزهراء وأبيها وبعلها وبنيها والسر المستودع فيها يا الله 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 إلهي بحق علي hasten in the return of our Imam, our Master, our Hujjah. Count us among the best of his servants and those who seek shahadat in his service. Ilahi بحق الزهراء. Ilahi by the oppressions seen by زهراء. Ilahi by the مظلوميات of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Protect us, save us, our Imam. Count us among the best of mu'mineen. Ya Allah, our children to be counted among the best of those who ever existed. Ya Allah, all those who are ill and ailing, specially present in this majlis, and those who have hopes in such majlis, grant them shifa. Muslims worldwide, save them, protect them. Mu'mineen at large, from the horror and the evil of shaitan in all forms and formats, Allah, protect them. واجل في فرج مولانا صاحب الزمان ماتم حسين
يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين